This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Good afternoon, Melbourne. It's 1:05. I've come to say goodbye. Conte Partiro, I think, is the Latin or the Italian for what I'm here to do. It is the very last Cravings for some time. A new season kicking off in 3 months. But Tad Lombardo and I are here. We have the incredible Gonchon Cherrier to talk hot cross buns, if nothing else. Good afternoon. We are indeed talking cravings. It's 6:30. You are on Joy 94.9 on what people are telling me is a reasonably warm Melbourne day. I think that I have gotten very used to some Queensland weather, Tad Lombardo.
You have. Your blood's thinned out, for sure.
It's nice that we can play here together today.
I know,
this is my last cravings.
I know, it is.
After eight years and 412 programs.
Yep. It's incredible. It's an incredible ride you've been on.
It's a great ride, sure. But... what a way to celebrate the last one. It's Melbourne Food and Wine Festival.
Yep. 50 Best as well. Coming
50
up.
Best coming in this week?
Next week.
Next week.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
It is this
soon.
Week. Yeah, sorry.
Soon. This week coming, there will be the world's 50 best. But we have one of the world's best right here in our studio.
We do.
His name is Gonchon Cherrier. You've met him before. He's come back to Melbourne to do some lessons on the art of the croissant. Mm-hmm. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's good to have you in the studio.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be there. Thank you for the invitation.
Ah, it's always a pleasure. Can I talk first about the croissant? Because I believe the French stole it from the Turks.
Yeah, it's croissant. Mm.
Is that true?
Crispy and chewy.
Yeah.
Mm. I never realised that.
The Turkish had a sweet similar to a croissant.
Really?
And croissant is French for crescent.
Yes.
Of course.
So it wasn't a French thing originally, it was Turkish.
Yeah.
And they stole it.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody. So you have your boulangerie. Do you call it a boulangerie in Collingwood?
Right. Yes. Yes. Boulangerie in Collingwood. And it's running well. We are happy and we changed a few things and changed some recipes and so on. And in fact, it's a good formule now.
Good.
Yeah. Yes, that's nice.
Because when we met you when you first opened, I think it was the first or second day, and I'm curious how much has had to change once you got used to the quality of Australian flour and eggs and our produce. How much have you had to change to?
You know, I like combine local product and the French product to make to create a bridge between two stories. You know.
Yeah.
in two countries. That's very, very important. And I use French butter to make my French croissant and French flour to make my French croissant. Mm-hmm. But after that, to make other things, I use local flour and local butter and so on. And in Melbourne, you can find what you want. You can have the very good raw material, very good fresh product, vegetables and fruits and so on. And
Did it take a long time to tailor the recipes, though, to sort of accommodate for the local product? Because every flour is different and moisture levels and the water is different.
Yeah. At the beginning, we had a few problems with the quality of croissant because, in fact, water and so on. And we took maybe a month to adapt, you know.
Right.
And after that, no, it's okay, it's good.
Pretty easy.
Yeah.
Straightforward.
Yeah.
I've been down at Masterclass at BMWH this morning, and Carlo Cracco, the incredible Carlo Cracco, was on stage, and somebody had the common sense to stand up and ask him a question about the quality of the eggs, because obviously depending on what chickens are fed, it results in a different quality of egg and different strength of proteins in the albumin and all of that. Do eggs play a big part, or have you thought about adapting recipes specifically to deal with our eggs?
Yes. In fact, for us, eggs is very important for brioche, you know, and for custard cream. And we baked, and you know it. We don't use only eggs, and I think it should be a maybe problem for cooking. Mm. But for us in to make custard cream and to make a brioche, it's not. We can adapt easily, you know. But sometimes the biggest problem is the color, and or to make some. Comment on dit, meringue, you know.
Yep.
But
can you say that word again, meringue?
Yeah, it's meringue.
I'll say
but
it that
it's
way.
Not. It's not. It's not a big.
I'm just
big
slipping
deal.
Into my chair. Something about that accent, the way you say meringue. I don't like meringue, but I sort of kind of do now. I sort of want to, Ted. I want to bring you in here because I know that you deal with products that come from Europe to do what you do.
Yeah.
Do you have to adapt, as Gonchon has done, do you have to adapt what you do because of different environments and stuff for chocolate?
I mean, from my point of view, I'm sort of working on a base level where I'm starting out from nothing with a recipe. So it's probably a bit easier than that, you know, than having to take an existing recipe and try to tweak it with the local ingredients. So from my point of view, it's probably a bit easier to do that because I'm starting from nothing and I can tweak it as it goes. So I'm not trying to create or match something that's already been done, if you know what I mean. So it's a bit more investigative, I guess, if that's the right word. But things do, you know, you do want to try to recreate things if you can, then and have them as
authentic.
They are and authentic. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
You've been doing Sweet Alley down as part of the River Grays for Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. You're only here for a couple of days.
Yeah.
When do you go back to Paris?
On Monday morning.
That's jet setting. Yes, at its best.
Just arrived and I should go back. But it's always I'm always happy to come in Melbourne because it's always a fever.
Do you fly business class?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. I can't imagine doing it, coach. No. I just can't. Not for that short trip. We're going to talk much more to Gonchon Chérié, particularly about everybody's favorite thing at this time of the year, hot cross buns, and what he's doing with the hot cross bun at the boulangerie in Collingwood. He's tomorrow going to be doing some bread demonstrations in store. We'll talk to you about those in a little bit as well. But Ted Lombardo, it is 13 minutes past one. You are on Cravings here on Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
It is a quarter past one, and we love Gabriel. We love Gonchon Chérié. He's here in the studio. We might have to get him to record one of those, Ted, I think.
Yeah.
Without my name in it. But we'll come to that. We'll come to that a bit later. Tomorrow in the store, you're doing a bit of a masterclass, Gonchon, on bread.
Yeah.
What are you going to teach people? You said earlier you use French flour in some of your product. What's the difference between French flour and our flour?
You know, it's quite like it directly come from us, and it's quite like a wine. We have recipes adapted at our flour, and to make the traditional baguette, you know, we need to have specific components, and we adapt our techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, with my French flour, because it's like all chef loves use specific things, and it's you adapt the material at your technique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the taste and the color and reaction when you bake and when you shape and when you cook, and that is very important. You can make all type of bread with all type of flour, but you need to know exactly what you make, and
where does the difference come in? Is it in the structure? Is it in the time it takes to prove, or is it in the taste?
It's taste, a lot of taste, and for sure after that, when you know how to make, you need maybe sometimes you need time, but you can adapt.
And what about the texture of it? I mean, that's coming from the flour as well, isn't it? And the proteins and the number of proofs that particular bread has had.
Yeah, you adapt your goal, you know.
Yeah.
And because it's if you have a really strong flour, you can give a rest for a long time.
Right.
If you want to have a baguette, you can mix really slowly, and you know you have many solutions to adapt. But a taste, that's very ultimate. Important. Yes, yeah. that is very important.
Yeah.
Do the French eat hot cross buns?
Yes. It's not really popular in France.
Mm.
It's
we start seeing them on the shelf on the 27th of December here.
Sadly,
It seems every year it gets the moment that Christmas Day is gone.
Yeah.
There is hot cross buns on the shelf. We have an obsession with them.
Yeah.
Most of them are made very, very badly, but I believe yours are spectacular.
It's hot cross bun. I like it. In France, it's not a habit for us to eat it. And in fact, in French bakery in France, you can't find it.
Right.
We don't have, but we make some chocolate a lot.
Yeah.
To replace that, and we make some brioche, but a normal one or a traditional one in the northeast in France. It's lembe. Brioche.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we make some brioche, special recipes, special recipe, and we shape it like in a mold, in the form lamb.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the traditional one.
Right.
And I heard this the other day, a little bit of trivia here.
I love trivia.
Yeah, well, and I don't know if it's true or not, so I'd like to hear your input. A good hot cross bun, how do you tell if it's a good bun or not? I was told that, count the number of raisins in it, and if
no, when you open the hot cross bun and you put a stack of butter on it, most of the butter will melt into the dough, but there is some remaining because the dough itself or the bread is dense enough to hold only a certain amount of butter, and the rest is there purely for taste.
I'll go with that.
You prefer heat or cold or?
Oh, warm, definitely warm. I think so.
Yeah, I think they can't. They give me a bit of heartburn.
Yeah. No, actually, I think they have to be warm.
I'm not a fan of the hot cross bun, but I like this idea of brioche because I think that's much more up my alley than a hot cross bun.
Mm, and we see sometimes chocolate hot cross bun or something.
Hey, I do them.
Right, people are now. Hey. You make chocolate ones.
Yeah,
where they're actual chocolate, not bread.
Chocolate and raisin.
Mm.
Yeah. Right. Proper hot cross bun, but
proper hot cross bun.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan. I've never been a fan of the hot cross bun. I find
you don't like.
I don't like sweet stuff either.
I know.
And I've seen people put all manner of. I saw the other day a white chocolate and raspberry hot cross bun, and I just
that's gross.
I walked up to the person who cooked them, and I slapped them and said, "Get a grip," because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is.
It should have fruit. It should have that beautiful little
Cross
on the top that is crunchy.
Mm. Yep.
Not soft and sloppy. No. And they should be dense, like a nice thick dense dough. We should get back to not my thing about hot cross buns and continue to talking to Gonfre Cherrier. He is here for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Yesterday, if you missed out on him doing, this morning, his signature croissants. But you can call by the store and still get some croissant today.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow you can go and watch him make bread. It says here you can whip up his world-renowned bread. And, of course, you can take bread home. The shop is at 140 Smith Street, Collingwood. It is part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. You're also at Sweet Alley as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, River Grays.
Yeah.
If I'm heading out south, going straight up Swanston Street, it's on the left, sort of once you get to taxi and transport there, the big hotel.
Yeah.
Just down to the left, that is the walk where all of the Sweet Alley is, correct?
Yeah.
I saw it all this morning and I'm like, oh my God, look, there's bread and there's champagne. I'm going back.
That sounds good.
Yes.
Well, we are, stop, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
We are in the middle of the 25th Melbourne Food and Wine Festival and it is taking Melbourne by storm. We're going to share very shortly. We'll introduce you to somebody from Melbourne Water. They are one of the sponsors of the River Grays, which is happening this weekend, both today and tomorrow. You can get down along the river in the heart of Melbourne and take part in the Food and Wine Festival. It won't cost you much, but you can just wander and taste and enjoy.
Yeah.
It's a nice way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
It's perfect, especially if you've got one to spend.
Not on a flight.
No.
and, of course, Gonfre Cherrier will be in his store tomorrow. He will be whipping up some dough. You can go in and buy some bread. What else can people buy? You're still doing... Tell us about some of the other product range you have in the store that people can buy. Let's tantalise them.
In Collingwood?
Yeah.
Many things. but in fact... Right.
You can buy many things.
No, come on. And, come on tomorrow. I will show you how to make a French bread.
Yeah.
French, because, you know, the technique is very important. Mm. And I will show how to shape and so. And you can find my favorite one. And it's quite like a signature. It's Ryan miso bread. Ryan miso bread is really nice.
Miso.
Yeah. Miso.
Really?
Yes.
And rye.
Yeah. Miso and
rye. I love
rye
bread.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do I. Really I like nice. The taste. It's It tastes like food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's
bizarre.
Yeah, it's good.
Yes. So that's all happening tomorrow in the store. If people go down to Sweet Alley this afternoon, they'll listen. You know, they could get in their car now and be there by 2 o'clock. What are they going to find down there that you have at Sweet Alley?
Yes, I will prepare strawberry and cucumber tart.
Oh. Strawberry and cucumber tart.
Yes, so wow. Amazing.
Oh, tell me about it. What are the components?
It's rye sugar dough. And it's Philadelphia and almond cream cheese.
Yeah.
Okay. And on top, it's strawberry confiture.
Yeah.
Ham. Jam.
Yeah.
And on top, strawberry and a really thin slice of cucumber.
Really?
And fresh basil.
Okay. Is that a delicacy
fresh
in France?
Basilic.
Is that something that's quite popular in France?
It's my way of strawberry tart.
Right.
Yeah. I like it. I love that because you have quite acidity with the cheese. Yeah. And
the cheese is a goat.
It's Philadelphia cheese.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Philadelphia. Yep. I combine Philadelphia and a pinch of cream.
Right, okay.
And a pinch of sugar, you know, quite like Petit Suisse when, you know.
Yeah.
And just to remind when you're a child. And
yeah.
So and I keep the skin of cucumber because to keep the freshness and to keep the quite green flavor, you know, like chlorophyll.
Yes,
and pairing with basilic and strawberries.
Right. Sounds perfect. Amazing.
Yeah, really good.
That's great.
I'm sorry, I'm just sitting over here wiping all of this saliva off my face. Gontron, I know you have to run off and do your thing, so thank you for joining us again on Cravings. It's so nice that you fly in from Paris just to be with us on my very last show. enjoy the rest of the Food and Wine Festival and safe travels. Bon voyage.
Merci.
Thanks for coming in.
Salut.
That is Gontron Cherrier. He's, like I said, you can get down to the shop tomorrow and watch him make bread. Trust me, it's going to be well worth your time. You can go and buy some of his product, or they are down at Sweet Alley today. So it's two if you're heading south along Swanston Street, across the road from Flinders Street Station, head down along the river as if you're going to walk down to the MCG, and you'll find Sweet Ellie down there. There are lots of sweet and delicious things for you to have today as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, the 25th Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. It's well underway, and it's causing me a little bit of lack of sleep and a hangover already. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9.
Cravings will be back shortly, so don't go too far. But if you do miss anything, you'll hear it on the Cravings podcast at joy.org.au/cravings via iTunes or your favourite podcast site. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
All day, every day. Joy 94.9 on air and online at joy.org.au.
You are indeed on air, online. You can enjoy our podcast, which is up, I think, from about Monday.
That's right.
We'll have a podcast up ready for you to enjoy. We are in the thick of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival opening weekend. It's been a great couple of days already, and we are delighted to welcome Colin. Colin is here from Melbourne Water. They are the sponsors of the River Greys, and right in the middle of the Yarra River, you may have noticed, is one huge bloody bowl of fruit.
Incredible.
Fascinating to see it floating in the river. Colin's here to tell us about it. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, Pete. Terrific to be here. Yes, I think if you go down to the Yarra, you'll see what is the world's largest bowl of fruit.
It's the largest.
The pontoons. Yeah, I think it is.
Have you had a look?
I haven't been down there yet. I've seen photos, though. It's pretty impressive.
It's super
impressive.
I am
going to look. Yeah.
I want to know how you got it past the right department heads at Parks and Wildlife.
A lot of different department heads involved, I think, around the Yarra River. But yes, it's there, and you're very excited. It was there for the first time last night.
Yes, I did see it as I stumbled out of a hotel somewhere. I want to talk a little bit about why Melbourne Water is involved with something like Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. There is an obvious correlation, but there's also something that's a slight discord, I think, that... I suppose without water, we don't have a food culture at all. So I guess that's the obvious part. Why be involved with something like the Food and Wine Festival?
I think, and you make the point, which is without water, there's so many things that we don't have and we can't enjoy. We're always looking for different ways and ideas for engaging with the community to remind them of just how precious water is as a resource. And I think probably we are all immediately aware that we have beautiful, fresh, clean water coming out of our taps.
We do. I see people drinking bottled water in Melbourne and I want to slap them.
Yeah, everywhere. But I think you don't naturally come to mind that water, of course, is in all of the fantastic produce that we grow. It's behind the great food and wine culture that we have here in Melbourne. It's behind so many other things as well, is around Melbourne, the great livability that we enjoy with our great Yarra River. And all the people that enjoy walking on it, biking on it, paddling down it, whatever they do. And then, of course, the great amenity that we enjoy in our parks. Water is there sustaining all of that.
Yeah. And, well, if we don't have it, we don't exist. That's the obvious bit. Yeah. It's sort of... I just wanted to read off some stats because it's fairly important. When you think about what's produced in Victoria... So Melbourne's fringe, the farming on Melbourne's fringe produces between 40 and 50% of our vegetables and creates 6,000 jobs. 85% of our cauliflower and 40% of our broccoli comes from Werribee, which is a suburb just up the road.
Yep.
78% of our strawberries come from the Yarra Valley. Not to mention the amount of wine that is produced around within a radius of this city. Forget all of that vegetable stuff because
I thought you get to the wine.
Yeah. Not to mention the wine.
It didn't take me very long at all. I can see the sense. I just I don't know where I was going with my question about it's sort of like an electricity company or a gas company sponsoring the festival as well. Without those things, we can't function.
Well, I didn't know until we got involved in this. I didn't know that, for instance, I think it's 90% of Australia's asparagus is grown out of Casey Cardinia.
Which is just up the road.
It's an amazing statistic.
Incredible. And I sat next to a guy at the longest lunch yesterday, Ammo Mason, who farms out near Werribee, producing fennel and lettuces and all sorts. And it's got got a thriving business out there, employs a number of people. Just fantastic to see that that secure source of water and healthy, clean water is actually doing for our livability and the lifestyles that we love here in Melbourne.
Indeed.
Yeah, and it's also, too, I guess, trying to draw attention to the sustainability, conservation, yes. You know, and the fact that without water we have nothing, we don't have life.
And I mean, very much that, Ted. Yeah. It's not just about drawing to people's attention the value of water and all the great livability that Melbournians enjoy. It is treating that resource, and finite resource, wisely, and treating it as a precious resource, not wasting it. Yeah. And we have initiatives like T155, so if the target is for every individual to use no more than 155 litres a day. We're a little bit over that at the moment, around about 166 litres.
So I can just tell you how to make people learn these things. Yeah. Make them go and live somewhere where water comes from tanks.
Yes.
And they have to manage that resource, which is very, very finite. If you're on a property and you've only got water tanks, 2-minute showers, you need to be very, very mindful about how you use water. I've come to learn that.
Yes.
Well, but I think too, a few more, I forget how many years back now it's been, but we were on really, really strict water restrictions. And, I mean, you were putting buckets in the shower to water the garden and literally 2-minute showers. You had a timer, and that was something that had to be done. Mm. It's funny how quick you forget.
No, but there's so many people I know that still have a timer in their shower.
Yeah.
And that still have some sort of overflow system in their shower to use the water for the garden. I think we became, through that period, far more very conscious about how we use water.
Yeah, and I think, again, I think we've done incredibly well. I think we've reduced on a household basis or a per-person basis about 22% water use over the last 10 or so years. But it's just beginning to creep up again. You know, we very quickly, I think, forget the millennium drought and just how close. I think our major storages were down as low as 25% at the end of the millennium drought.
It was pretty dire.
The largest storage, which is the Thompson Dam, which is about 60% of all our storage, that was down as low as 16%. Yeah. So you're pretty much down to the muddy bits at the bottom.
Yeah, that's a yabby country.
But it's interesting, though, because I think in Australia, because we are a very dry continent to start with, we have to view things differently. And when you go to other parts of the world, like when I visit my family back in the States, I mean, the concept of collecting rainwater from the roof and keeping a tank for your garden or your laundry
or
your swimming pool is just not done there, or the dual flush toilets. I mean, everyone, you know, quite knows the fact that that's an Australian sort of invention out of necessity. So I do think we as a whole or a community do well, but you can always do better, I guess.
And we do incredibly well. Yeah. And as a little bit of an outsider, I've been in Australia now for about 14 years, but I came from the UK, as you can no doubt tell.
All of you interlopers. Good heavens, I'm surrounded by them.
But we don't have that culture in the UK, is, you know, a water tank in your garden and reusing grey water from your domestic use.
Yeah. Stuff.
That's a completely foreign concept, largely. Although I think probably creeping in even over there now is...
What's been interesting is the proliferation. It's not a very good, easy word for me to say.
Proliferation.
The proliferation. That.
Certainly not after a night out at the Food and Wine Festival.
Of water tanks just popping up in suburban yards everywhere.
Yes.
Just seeing the amount of people that have a water tank that do use it for their garden or their pool or whatever it might be. It's quite... Growing up, we had big tin water tanks in the country. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of unheard of to see them in the city, but now they seem to be everywhere. Everyone's got a water tank in the garden. This out the front of the major hardware chains, where there used to be wheelbarrows.
Yeah, that's right.
Their water tanks.
And it was the harsh restrictions that were brought in during the millennium drought.
Mm, yeah.
You know, that drive that kind of education and that awareness, and people go out and they invest in more efficient shower heads, in shower, you know, in the hose trigger hoses, etc. That sort of thing. And when things are not as dire as they became at the end of the drought, you know, I think it just slips a little bit from your consciousness. So the idea is, and the idea of the largest fruit bowl is just to remind
you've
people.
You've preempted my question. I was going to say, what then is the significance of the fruit bowl? People go and grab a selfie and grab some seeds and that sort of thing at the site. What's the significance of a floating bowl of fruit to remind us of water?
So each item of fruit down on the fruit bowl has got a little sticker stuck on it.
Yeah.
92% Melbourne water, 75% whatever it actually is. So I think just to remind people that behind all the great produce, the stuff that we grow, the beautiful food culture that we enjoy, sits water, which is fantastic. And we'd go even further than that and just remind people, you know, that the great amenity that we enjoy down the Yarra, in our parks, our green spaces. And in fact, you know, Australia's fastest growing economy is underpinned by a secure, safe water supply, fresh source of water.
The desal plant that we built some years ago from Gippsland, does that come into play ever at all? Or
it does, and it's been in the news a little bit recently because we've got the first water actually coming and being delivered into Cardinia. And I think some misconceptions around the desal plant is back at the start of the Millennium Drought, our storages were 98% full. And by the end of the drought, they got down to around 25, as I mentioned. So we very nearly ran out of water. Now, the desal plant can produce anything up to, I think it's 150 gigalitres of water a year, which is about one-third of what Melbourne needs in a 12-month period. So we can't wait to turn that desal plant on at the last minute. Once there's a crisis, it's too late. So the main thing is, and what we're doing now, is just topping up our storages, keeping them at a decent level, so that we try and operate the system to have a buffer of around 10 years for a 10-year drought or for the next 10-year drought.
And it's also trying to, I guess, accommodate for Melbourne's booming population, which just seems to be growing and growing and growing.
Australia's fastest growing city.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah. And and trying to incorporate that into the mix of calculation and you know, making sure that there's enough water to go around.
And Tad, not forgetting, of course, the climate change.
Yeah,
so I think climate change is, you know, traditionally I think people
think...
The elephant in the room is people think, well, over the long term, less rain. But actually climate change is also greater extremes of drought and flooding as well. Yes, and,
sorry, I live in Queensland. And let me tell you, the amount of water we've seen over the last week is extraordinary. And we had rain for 10 days before we caught the tail end of that cyclone. Everything was already sodden. My swimming pool was overflowing as it was well before that all happened. Yep. Once that happened, we've just got... There's nowhere for the water to go.
Yes.
Because it has been wet for a short period of time. So our wet season, which would normally happen from October through to, say, February, all came at once in March.
So, you know, one end of that sort of those variables, we worked very hard to make sure that we got great drainage and great retarding basins to cope with flood water, et cetera. But at the other end is we need to be prepared for the next prolonged and protracted drought. Sure. And that's making sure that our storages are up full enough so that we've got that buffer. Keep topping them up with the desal plant as and when we need to, when the rains aren't there to do it. And then obviously planning for over the longer term, there will be less and less rain. We know that. Mm. And by, I think it's 2050, is Melbourne's population is forecast to be 10 million, double.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge pressure.
I'll be dead by then.
Yeah. I'll be gone by then. I don't know about you, but I'll be gone.
And you won't need to. You won't need water to for the lawn where I'm going to be. there's no water where I'm going. I'm interested to sort of take... You mentioned something about 150 gigalitres. How much is one gigalitre? How many...
So a billion litres.
A billion litres. So 150 billion litres.
You're challenging my maths.
No, it's going to challenge mine because to my mind, 150 billion litres would be about 90, filling up the MCG as it is 90 times. And that's what we use in 1 year.
So we use 432 gigalitres, going up around about 2-3% a year. That's around 270 MCGs. And you may not know, at the other end of that is we treat about 300 billion litres of sewage every year as well. So that's, I think, the equivalent of about 120,000 Olympic pools. And note, I didn't fill the MCG full of sewage.
Yeah, no, please don't. I don't know MSAC are going to be entirely thrilled about their pools full of crap either, but I think it's a very interesting way, or a very sensible way, to look at, try and get your head around those numbers, because it is an extraordinarily large number.
Yes.
So trying to understand that number and what it physically means in real terms. So using the MCG in an Olympic swimming pool is a very sensible way to do it.
Some idea. Yeah. And giant fruit. And
yes,
fruit
well, that's this right, is that the too. Thing. Yeah. So you can find the giant fruit bowl. It is floating on the Yarra. If you're heading down to River Grace today or tomorrow, it will be there for the duration of the festival.
Oh, no, it's going to be there until Monday. So you've got a limited chance to see it, yes.
And then what are you doing with the fruit bowl?
Well, then we've got all sorts of ideas, which we're going to keep secret. But it's I'm
you
told
don't
that
keep secret?
No, no,
you break news on this program. Forget the ABC.
You may see it down at Treatment 17. So we have another event coming up at the end of April, 22nd of April, 29th of April, which is international artists, local artists. They're creating great artworks down at our Western Treatment Plant down at Westby. Those are on display for those 2 weekends. You may see the giant fruit and vegetable bowl down
in
Werribee as well.
So you can then just trot it around the state for events where we need to highlight
all over
preservation of water.
We have another fantastic event that we ran, I think it was in early February, which is Inflatable Regatta.
Right.
Where you saw 2,000 people floating down the Yarra on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. So we're thinking that a giant fruit bowl amongst those 2,000 people next year might be a... Another good use. But just gentle reminders constantly to the community is, first of all, remember just what a precious resource water is and just to use it wisely. Respect and it. Conserve it.
Well, Colin, we are delighted that you're here, delighted that you've been able to work with Melbourne Food and Wine on putting this together. I think it's a marvellous thing and a really strong reminder with something so visual and it's so important to us that we need to say thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you, Pete.
You are here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It is 17 minutes to 2. There remains 17 minutes of my relationship with this program. We'll talk more about that very shortly.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the Featured Providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
Because Melbourne Water are one of the contributing partners of the River Graze, which is happening today, down on the river today and tomorrow. You can get down there and be a part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. It is an incredible place to be. And well, now comes the time, Tad, where I've got to think about saying goodbye.
I know. No, until next time.
Until next time. Well, I'm not. There won't be a next time. This is as of the next. So this show is finishing as it is.
It is
today.
Yeah. Yep.
It will have a 3 month rest. And then Tad Lombardo will be back to elevate it to great big new heights.
Oh, I've got some big shoes to fill.
Yes. So I was having a look because the World's 50 Best is in Melbourne on Wednesday. It's announced. So I was going through and I've opened it up because I wanted to be reminded of this little red engine that could. When we first put this program together, it was going to be for One Grid to see how Melbourne would respond to a food and wine program. Yeah. And it has gone exceptionally well. So much so that of the world's top 50, I'm just trying to work out how many of the world's top 50. So the current number one is Osteria Francescana.
Yep.
In Modena in Italy. Massimo Bottura has been 3 times in this studio.
Yeah.
So we've met him. El Cella de Can Roca I've missed. So that's one that I didn't get to. That's number two.
Yep.
Number three is 11 Madison Park, and we did meet the chef from 11 Madison Park. Number four is Central in Peru, and it's not so long ago we spoke to Virgilio Martinez. Number five is Noma in Copenhagen.
Yep.
Rene Redzepi, twice.
Yep.
We've met Rene. I have not met number six, which is Mirazur in France. We didn't get that opportunity. Mulgaritz in San Sebastian. Yep. Been there, done that, tick that one off. Narisawa in Japan, we've been there and ticked that one off. Stirrek in Vienna, have not. And nor have I done Asador Extebari in Spain, which is number 10. Yep. But then I started looking through the rest of the top 50. And I'm like, tick, 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 tick. Yeah. So number 11 is Dom in Sao Paulo, yes, in Brazil. We've met Alex Satala a number of times. Number 14 is The Ledbury in London.
Yeah.
And we've met Brett Graham a number of times. I did catch up very briefly yesterday with Grant Achatz from Alania, yeah, in Chicago. We won't get a chance to play that now, but we certainly have caught up with him as well. So just looking through the top 50, it's been a great privilege to meet so many of the chefs. And I want to talk, yeah, particularly about two restaurants that will be in the top 50 in Australia. So yeah, two Australian restaurants, mm-hmm, in the top 50, one of which is Attica.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Shuri, on any occasion, has always made himself available, yes, to talk to me. It didn't matter what he was doing. He's always been there to say, yes, I can talk to you if it's by phone from wherever he is.
Yep.
And Dan Hunter from Bray,
yeah,
has also been very generous with his time. And then I was thinking back to who are all the people that have helped out on, yeah, the show. So when we first started, there was many people may remember Lonnie. Lonnie was my panelist.
Yeah.
And he was with me for some time. And so he needs to be recognized. Yep. Hilary McNevin has sat in this chair many times, yeah, and filled in for me while I've been elsewhere. She's always been my anchor when I've done Melbourne Food and Wine, yep, Festival masterclasses. So I was always sort of calling in from where I was. So Hillary needs to be acknowledged as well. And then there are people like Dan Sims and Matt Preston in particular who've always, again, been available to,
yeah,
to help out, to talk about wine and what have you. There's been so many guests over this period of time. It's just been,
yeah, it's been huge,
extraordinary. So I sat down, and when I was on the plane on the way down, I did some maths. We've had... there's been a total of 424 shows.
Yep.
I think I've missed a dozen of them.
Really?
Yeah, maybe one or two more, yep, but I could sort of only kind of work out a dozen, whether the shows are pre-recorded or,
right,
or not. So that's a lot of Saturdays that I've...
More than just Saturdays, though. I'm talking about production time.
The production and all the stuff, yeah, in the week and chasing people about. So that's all, yeah, that's all been... interesting. And then I've thought about if we work that out with guests, usually two.
Yeah.
So there's been about 850 guests on, yeah, the program. Sometimes there's three, sometimes there's, yeah, one, but about 850 guests across the 8 years.
Yeah, it's pretty mammoth.
Yeah, so that's 100, like just over 100 guests, yeah, a year.
Yep.
Some of them the best in the world.
Yeah, which is incredible.
And not just food people, but winemakers, yeah, and all of the incredible producers that we've met over the period of time. So there's a heck of a lot of statistics associated, yeah, with this program.
Absolutely.
So, we've just received a message from Donna Frock. Donna has been somebody who's listened to this program, I reckon, for all 400 and whatever episodes it is. So thank you, Donna. She says, our Saturdays won't be the same. And there's another one from Sibylla Deluxe who also says, thank you for the show. So we haven't heard from your mum today.
No, well,
maybe she's ditched me.
No, she hasn't ditched you. She it's the time change now.
Daylight of
savings has changed, and yeah, the show's a lot later over there.
Oh, okay. Oh no, is daylight savings still happening here, or is it stopped over there?
It stopped over there, and then tonight, okay, it stops here.
Right.
Yeah. So then we gain an hour of sleep tonight, so that's a good thing.
You do.
Oh, no, you don't. You just
go back. I sort of get it's weird. I sort of get an extra hour going over the border. Because my flight, right, is a two-hour flight, but I departed 5, landed 6. So I sort of kind of get that hour back when I go over the border.
But you haven't been here long enough to acclimate to the time, so...
Look, I'm looking through all these restaurants. Relay with Christian Pugliese. We've, yep, spoken to Christian. Naam, David Thompson, who,
yeah,
is,
that's right,
doing a masterclass. He's done his masterclass this morning.
Yep.
He's at number 37. Ben's at number 36 at Attica. Number 32, 3.
Restaurant
Andre, so Andre Chang at number, yep, 32. There's Astrid Gaston is in there as well in Peru. So there's just so many of these incredible restaurants that Favican, number 41.
Yeah,
but Magnus Nielsen.
But isn't it incredible too how the industry's changed in the last 8 years as
extraordinarily so.
Like in Melbourne is now, you know, as of Wednesday, the focal point of the food world, you know, because of the awards that are going to be here, is going to be here, which is pretty amazing. And
I'm very upset that I'm not going to be here.
I'll let you know how it is.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll be doing what I do every year with the World Star 50. I'll actually watch it online as they, yeah, do the announcements because I can. So I won't have to be up in the middle of the night.
No, that's right,
which is a
nice luxury, definitely.
And I also need to say thank you to all of the the PR agencies and publicists and friends who've always worked with the program and helped me gather guests when they've been here from around the world, and people like Fiona Brooke who got Gontron in for us this morning, Kathy Lane at Fireworks, and all of the wonderful PRs around town who've been able to assist in finding guests when they're looking after them. So they all deserve some acknowledgement as well. It is 4 minutes to two. There remain 4 minutes. We'll take a quick break and we shall return momentarily to say our farewells for the next 3 months. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Heston Blumenthal. You're with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
That always sounded like it was in a water tank.
It does sound that way.
The Escape Pod and Cravings are sort of combining for a new show for an hour each Saturday. What's it going to look like?
It's going to be called the Escape Hour, and it's going to be a half hour of food and a half hour of travel. And we're going to try to link up the two
with
the same country. Yep. And we'll be doing that from 1 to 2. 2 to 3.
Starting next Saturday.
Starting next Saturday, the 8th of April. And while Cravings is resting, that's what we'll do, and keep our feet in the water.
Cravings is having a lie on a couch somewhere in the sun. So Cravings will be back on the next grid, I think, in July, August.
I think it's the 11th of August.
And it will be in your very capable hands. I might pop in on occasion just to annoy you.
Yeah, I think you should. Promise.
I won't be down on Saturdays very often, but if I'm here on a Saturday, I'll come in and stir the pot to keep
like
it going.
All times.
Indeed. Russ is with you on the Escape Pod between 2 and 3 in about 15 seconds, so we'll hand over to him. But until then, it's goodbye from him and it's goodbye from me. This has been Cravings with me, Pete Dillon, and with Tad Lombardo joining you for the last time for a while. So we'll see you when we're back on the roost. But now it's the Escape Pod with Russ.
Thanks for listening to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663-6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.